It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. Today, I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Dan Adcock, Legislative Director for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. Dan, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks, Bill.
And we also have Jesse Clement, Government Affairs Director for the Federal Managers Association. And welcome, Jesse, to Fed Talk.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
We're going to be talking today about issues affecting legislative issues that affect federal employees in both the closing days of the 111th Congress and in the 112th Congress about to come up. And I'm delighted to have two very, very well-informed guests to talk about that. And I might chime in occasionally because one of the things I do is do legislative work for the Senior Executives Association. So I have some familiarity also with these issues. And before we get started, I would like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. And for more information, please go to geico.com. I know as I talk to our members of the Senior Executives Association and other federal employees, and I talk to people like Dan and Jesse, that there is an increasing anxiety in the federal community. People are more concerned, more interested, paying closer attention, and wanting more information than ever before. So if that applies to you, please feel free to give us a call, get a very informed, educated opinion to whatever concern or issue you have, you know, about legislative issues, about things pending in this Congress, likely to happen in the next Congress. Give us a call, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Why don't we get started with you, Dan? Tell us just a little bit about what you at the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, NARF, what you do up on Capitol Hill, and what overall impression of the climate for federal employees and retirees.
Well, we're in the business of ensuring that the earned economic and health security of federal employees and retirees is preserved, that the government honors its obligations towards its employees, retirees, and survivors. Our focus right now, I think, along with most of the organizations in the federal and postal community, is on the unprecedented attacks that we're anticipating in the new Congress regarding these earned benefits. You know, one of the things I think that illustrates that best is the president's decision to embrace, to take a look at his fiscal commission's proposals, or, you know, a report of over 50 pages. And out of all those proposals, the only one that he publicly endorses unilaterally right out of the blocks is a two-year pay freeze for federal employees. And I think that says a lot about policymakers having the political will to make big cuts to federal retirement and health benefits and pay and the workforce over other areas involving other constituencies. And unfortunately, I don't think that bodes well for the process that we're about to undergo. I mean, you know, to give you another example that we've seen this movie before, back in the 1980s and early 1990s, federal retirement COLAs were cut by $50 billion over that period of time, while not a dime came out of Social Security. And so our concern is that as this process moves forward and as the Congress looks at these very draconian cuts on federal retirement and health benefits, that after everything's boiled down and people understand the political costs of going over after much larger constituencies like 40 million Social Security beneficiaries and Medicare beneficiaries, that we could very well be singled out for some very huge cuts. But I think our bottom line, this is also a war that we can win, and that's what we're in the business of doing.
Jesse, how did all of this happen? When did federal employees become the scapegoat?
I think you can directly tie the situation federal employees are in to when the economy started to take a turn for the worst. All of a sudden, when that happened, you saw news articles on the front page of major papers saying that federal employees make too much money. There was a spike in the number of feds who make over $150,000 and they have these great benefits. And you mentioned previously the anxiety that the federal community is feeling right now. And I think that's directly tied to the misinformation that's being put forth in the media and then turned into talking points by certain members of Congress who want to see federal employees' benefits cut.
So, Jesse, what's the current status on the Hill of legislation that affects federal employees? There's a couple of things going on up there right now.
Well, I think it probably makes sense to start with the pay freeze, just because I think that's on the forefront of everybody's mind.
Is that a done deal yet?
It's not quite done yet, but it's inevitable, I think it's fair to say. The House passed a long-term continuing resolution funding most agencies at FY10 levels last week, and that bill included a two-year pay freeze for federal employees. The omnibus, which the Senate was supposed to take up yesterday, which contained, you know, increases for certain agencies, not all agencies were funded at FY10 levels, also included a two-year pay freeze for federal employees, but the Republicans blocked that from happening, and now they're talking about another short-term CR. While we can't say definitively that a two-year pay freeze will be in that bill, I think it is likely to happen.
It's likely to happen. So that looks like definitely something that will be coming out of this. What about the legislation that just passed last night on the and I'll ask Dan to comment on that about the deal to keep the Bush tax cuts for two more years. How does that affect federal employees?
Well, there was our major concern that we had is the provision in the legislation that would provide a 1 year 2% reduction in Social Security payroll taxes, so that anybody who is part of Social Security would see their withholding go from 6.2% to 4.2% for 2011. And the main motivation behind that was to stimulate the economy, put more money into people's pockets. They go out and spend that money and help the recovery along. There were two issues on this that were important to the federal community. One was that because of the operation of the law that authorizes the newer federal employee retirement system, the way it works is that the law first takes a figure of a 7.0% of payroll contribution that FERS employees should make to the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund. But that amount in the law is subtracted by whatever the Social Security withholding is, which is 6.2%. So you take 7.7% minus 6.2%, and the actual payroll contribution by FERS employees into the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund every year, or every paycheck, is 0.8%. But that amount is tied to whatever is in the Social Security Act on the withholding for Social Security. So if the withholding, Social Security withholding, goes from 6.2% to 4.2%, that means that actually results in an increase of 2% for a total of 2.8% that FERS employees would have to pay.
Well, that's for their FERS annuity, not their Social Security.
Exactly, for their FERS annuity. So the legislation, when it was considered by the Senate, that would have nullified any benefit from a reduction in their Social Security payroll tax withholding. Fortunately, there was an amendment adopted in the Senate on Thursday that takes care of this problem. So when this bill is signed into law by the president today, it will not require FERS employees to make a 2% higher reduction in their payroll.
That's only FERS employees.
That's only FERS. Right. So Civil Service Retirement System employees, of course, this is the older system that FERS replaced, but that about 16% of the federal workforce is still on. We were interested, and I know many of our many other federal postal organizations were interested in providing them a payroll tax holiday. They don't participate in Social Security, but the annuity they receive through the Civil Service Retirement System is the equivalent of a Social Security benefit plus a private sector annuity. So they're paying a full 7%, and so if if the whole motivation behind this legislation was to stimulate the economy, the Social Security payroll tax holiday was really used as the vehicle. It wasn't necessarily important that that's where it came from, and that the intent of the legislation was to provide workers with a stimulative effect in the economy. So we supported a 2% reduction in the payroll deductions that go to the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund for those Civil Service Retirement System employees to provide equality to them so that they would have the same benefit that any other workers would have.
Did that happen?
It did not.
It did not.
No.
All right, we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. I'm talking about federal employee legislation with Dan Adcock of NARF and Jesse Clement of FMA. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. GEICO, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and if you are a federal employee with a concern about what Congress might do to you in the upcoming year, please give us a call or email us. Our phone number, our toll-free phone number, is 1-877-936-9333, or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com, and you can have your question answered by our expert guest this morning on Fed Talk, Dan Adcock from NARF and Jesse Clement from FMA, both of whom are up on the Hill all the time fighting for federal employee rights and benefits. Dan, a little bit more about what's happened with this issue of this payroll tax holiday, and the CSRS employees got a little bit of a raw deal. But if you take it to the Debt Commission report, which just recently was issued, there's more potentially in store for federal employees on the retirement arena, isn't there?
Well, yes, and there's just a huge laundry list of proposals they made to cut federal civilian retirement health benefits, freeze pay, and reduce the federal workforce by 10%. We were just talking during the break about one that we find that's particularly scary, that would change the way the government share is paid towards the federal employee health benefits program premiums. So if you're a federal employee or a retiree right now, you pay about an average of 30% of the premium, and the government pays the remaining 70%. And so if a premium goes up, say, $10 in a year, that means that you're going to be paying $3 of that increase, and the government's going to be paying $7 of that increase, just to give you an illustration. So within that ratio, the government and employees and retirees pay an equal share with whatever the increase in healthcare premiums is. This proposal that the Fiscal Commission came up with would change all of that by limiting the increase in the government share to the gross domestic product plus 1%. And that rises much more slowly historically than healthcare inflation. And so over time, you would see that federal employees and retirees and survivors would pay an ever increasing share. And in fact, according to some of the preliminary analysis that we've done of the proposal, is that within 5 years, that employees and retirees would instead go from paying about 30% to 40% of the premium. In 10 years, they would go from paying 30% to 58% of the premiums. And in the next 5 years, their total cost would go up about $3,500 because of this proposal. So what it does is the premium still costs the same. It just shifts the burden of the cost and the risk of increase in healthcare inflation to employees, retirees, and survivors instead, and shifts it away from the government.
And that's assuming that the premium is also going up.
Right. That's
because
right.
The increase is occurring because the premium is going up.
That's right.
So it's a significantly increased cost to federal employees. The other thing that I noticed in the report was the part about the FERS employee contribution, which, Dan, you mentioned is 0.8%. It's limited at 7% and covers Social Security plus the cost of the annuity. The agency pays the rest of that.
Right.
That cost of the annuity, which is fully funded by current employees. What do you see? What's the commission recommend, and how would that affect current employees?
Well, they're talking about requiring current employees to pay a much larger share towards their retirement, and so, you know, that prospect really essentially would be a pay cut. You know, we're not just talking about, if this were to be enacted, we're not just talking about the pay freeze that Jesse was speaking about a few moments ago that is likely to go in effect as a result of appropriations legislation the Congress is being considered. On top of that, you would have a pay cut, and that's what we're really talking about here. And this is something that we feel is necessary because the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund is financially sound. There's no reason to do this. It doesn't run into the same sort of financing problems as Social Security. And as you mentioned, I mean, the benefit of when the federal employee retirement system was first devised in the mid-80s, this is a system that's fully financed at the total normal cost of what FERS costs. So there's not really any good public policy reason to do this other than deficit reduction.
And you know, it's just a shifting of the same amount of money. And it's, I understand it's being done in contravention of the promise that Senator Stevens made to federal employees when he created FERS to do so without increasing the cost of the retirement system for federal employees.
Right, and there was that's right. When the program was created, there was a conscious effort by people like Senator Stevens that the FERS program would cost no more than CSRS, and they accomplished that goal. So I think that takes that subverts the original deal that was made when the program was first created.
So Jesse, it's the Friday before Christmas Eve, and Congress is still in session. When do you think that this Congress, the 111th, will break?
Oh, Bill, I'm not a betting person. I wouldn't put money on guessing that date. But the Senate, this information that was coming out from the Senate last night was saying that they were going to pass a short-term CR as opposed to a long-term CR like the House. If they do that, you know, they can come up with an agreement to fund the federal government for the rest of the year. I think we'll see them skip town as quick as possible.
Could it happen today?
I doubt it.
I was going to say
the same
thing.
So at least Monday or Tuesday.
Monday or Tuesday, folks on the Hill are preparing to be here next week.
And perhaps work this weekend.
I think it would be in their best interest to maybe get with the House Democrats and figure out what they can do instead of a short-term CR, and that, you know, as opposed to a long-term CR. Because I think if there's a short-term CR and then the new Congress next year is talking about funding the government for the remainder of FY11, I think agencies are going to see a lot more cuts than they would with
the long-term. They see cuts, not 2010 levels, but actually reduced from that.
That would be my guess, yes.
Which would affect a lot of federal employees with tough, tough budget cuts.
Exactly. I mean, you look at agencies' overhead costs alone, the costs of renting a building, paying your utility bills, these things don't go down. So if you fund agencies at the previous year's levels, their overhead increases, giving them less money to actually carry out operations.
All right, Jesse, so that we've raised all of these fears and concerns, why don't we talk about some good stuff for just a minute? The 111th Congress is winding down, but it wasn't totally bad for federal employees. Why don't you talk about some of the successful legislative efforts that you and Federal Managers Association, NARF, and other federal employee groups accomplished in the 111th Congress?
Well, I'm sure it will come to a great shock to all your listeners that a first sick leave credit passed last year.
That's right. It was just last year that federal employees were getting benefits.
It was. It seems like a long time ago. The president signed that legislation on October 28th of last year, a day I will never forget. Several years ago, various members of management groups got together and they were all sharing the same story, which, Bill, you're well aware of, which you kept hearing from their members that FERS employees were burning their sick leave because there was no incentive for them to conserve it. So members of the Government Managers Coalition took this issue to the Hill, not as an equity issue with their CSRS counterparts, but rather a productivity issue. And I think it was that message that allowed a FERS sick leave credit to gain traction up on Capitol Hill. We saw standalone legislation introduced in the 110th Congress. We saw stronger standalone legislation introduced in the 111th. And ultimately, a full credit for sick leave was included in the FY10 National Defense Authorization Bill, which means if you retire between the signing of that legislation and January 1st of 2014, FERS employees get 50% of their sick leave credited towards their annuity. If you retire on or after January 1st, 2014, you get all of your sick leave credited towards your annuity.
It sounds to me, Jesse, like you know a little bit about FERS sick leave.
Just a little.
And I am proud to say that Congressman Jim Moran, who was the chief supporter of that legislation, first announced his support for FERS sick leave as a guest on Fed Talk a number of years ago. So this was a significant point. And I guess I'd like to make the point that it's only been a year and so much has changed in that 1 year. And federal employees now are the losing end of any debate on Capitol Hill for sympathy or for give me a break. But yet these things do change. And without the efforts of people like you, Jesse and Dan up on Capitol Hill, constantly monitoring and feeding into the debate, it would be a lot worse, I think. Don't you?
I think so, too. And I also, credit should be given to the staffers and the members of Congress on the Hill who have been very supportive of federal employee issues and haven't taken cheap shots at them, to gain political points back in their districts. But those members are slipping away as this Congress moves forward and as we enter the 112th.
So and you benefit by having resources and members that can help you accomplish your mission. So why don't I give both of you a chance to tell our listeners how federal managers can join FMA and how any active federal employee or retired federal employee can join NARF. Jesse, why don't you go first?
For the folks listening that are unfamiliar with the Federal Managers Association, we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit association made up of manager supervisors and executives in the federal government. We are the oldest and largest membership association geared towards managers. We will be celebrating our 100th anniversary in just shy of 2 years. We have a national office staff dedicated to advancing your interest as federal managers on Capitol Hill. Our website is www.fedmanagers.org. We have a convention coming up, which includes an entire day's worth of training for managers and supervisors in the federal government. We are also in the process of rolling out our 2011 legislative agenda. Our membership is currently commenting on the draft we put together for them. I would strongly encourage you guys to check us out.
Okay, Dan, how do you get into NARF?
Well, you go to www.narfe, that's NARFE.org, and you can become a member that way. We have 300,000 members, in addition to the legislative advocacy we do not only here in Washington, but all across the country. We have a retirement benefits that also counsels individuals on their retirement and health benefits. So it's kind of like their own HR office that we have in-house. We employ former workers from the Office of Personnel Management that understand these programs backwards and forwards. Have a monthly magazine, have a political action committee, affinity benefits. It's a great organization with people who really have their hearts and minds into moving the organization forward and looking out for the agenda of federal employees and retirees.
And it's also a great place for retired federal employees to get together. There's an active network of chapters and
right.
a place where they have regular meetings and people can meet other retired federal employees.
That's right. We have 1,500 chapters. We have state organizations in all 50 states and some of the territories. So it's really an incredible network, and we're literally in every congressional district of the country.
Right. And I would encourage federal employees everywhere, especially at these times, the more people who join groups like NARF and FMA, or, you know, if you're a member of a bargaining unit, joining your union and paying dues, all of these groups are up on Capitol Hill all the time, but they can do more with more resources. So the more people who join, I think, you know, there's been an attitude for a long time that you don't really need to join because you can get the benefits free. But these organizations are more effective with more resources, with more members, just simply because they can tell members of Congress that hey, we have all these members and we care about these issues.
Absolutely.
In addition to the stronger grassroots network, you know, the more members we have, the more grassroots we have active, contacting their members of Congress. Lobbyists have their in, and they have the staffers to talk to, but we both know that constituent voices, the people who vote for these members of Congress, are more powerful than anything else.
Right. And just to echo the same sentiment is that, you know, when we walk in the door of a member of Congress's office, we have much more credibility if our grassroots have been there first to make their case.
All right. We will continue talking to Dan Adcock from NARF and Jesse Clement from FMA after this short break. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and with me is Dan Adcock from NARF and Jesse Clement from FMA. And this is a show about the legislative accomplishments of 111th Congress, what lies ahead for federal employees, and of course dealing with the current federal employee anxiety that's existing about legislative changes that may be ahead. Dan, there were other accomplishments in the 111th Congress, things that we can be proud of, things that your organization was instrumental in pursuing. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, I think one of the things we're most proud of is something where we actually put money in the pockets of federal retirees, and that is that back in, and this is sort of seems like a distant memory now too, back at the beginning of 2009 when the president first took office, there was great interest because of the economy to pass stimulus legislation. And so amongst all the different tax breaks that were included in the legislation and other benefits to inject money into the economy, was a plan to give Social Security beneficiaries first a $300 payment, then it became a $250 payment to cut the cost of the legislation. But what happened with this, the problem with this proposal is that it left out over a million federal, state, and local government retirees who are not eligible to receive Social Security. So without that link of Social Security, they weren't going to receive anything. And so as a matter of equity, we were able to go to Senator John Kerry from Massachusetts, and he was able to work with Senator Max Baucus as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee to include language in the stimulus package to provide a one-time $250 refundable tax credit to these federal, state, and local government retirees who are not eligible for Social Security. So we were pretty proud of that achievement. Another one, very briefly, was legislation included in the defense authorization, which also included the first sick leave legislation that would allow federal retirees to go back to work for the federal government without offset to either their annuity or their salary on a part-time basis for a limited duration. And this is authority that already exists out there, but agencies have to go to the Office of Personnel Management to get a waiver to bring in reemploy annuitants without losing their annuity or their salary. And just in an era where, you know, you got 60% of the federal workforce eligible to retire in the next 5 years, so you have a lot of your talent leaving, and so this is a way to bring people back where there's skill shortages, and also not have to go, there's not the red tape for agencies to have to go to OPM to get a waiver to bring them in and to make employment with them attractive. And also for these reemployed annuitants to train the people who will succeed them. So that was a big win for us as well.
Now, Dan, we've talked about a couple of the recommendations in the Debt Commission's report. Let me ask you first, In your observation of Congress, the congressional reaction, the political reaction to that debt commission, do you think there's a real likelihood that some of those debt commission proposals will become law in the 112th Congress?
I hope not, but I think that the danger we anticipate is real and serious, and we're taking it very seriously. I mean, I think there's a lot of points. One of the things that that we see playing out is that, you know, the president's State of the Union address will be in late January, and we're already hearing rumblings that, in order to, you know, as a political move to control the debate on the budget and preempt the House Republicans, that there sounds like there's interest in the president announcing that he would embrace some or all of the proposals made by the fiscal commission, which could include the ones that would be harmful to the federal community as well. So that's one particular action point that we're concerned about. The other is that both the budget resolution, which is Congress is required, where it sets its spending priorities for the year, is required to take up in April. That coincides also with the time of the public debt limit.
Right, that's going to be a major issue.
Oh, huge, yeah. And it, you know, for members of Congress that got elected on being committed to making massive cuts to federal spending, it will provide them tremendous leverage to extract the kind of spending cuts that they're looking for. And, you know, and the easiest thing to do will be to take this report that the Fiscal Commission came up with, and especially if the president embraces more of that report, then that would give them much more political cover to move those recommendations forward, which would be very harmful to the federal community.
Okay, so that's an overall assessment of the likelihood of the Debt Commission report getting legs into the next Congress. Jesse, let me ask you about you know, something we were worried about yesterday, and as we were watching the issues in the Senate on the omnibus appropriations, which of course has now been withdrawn, but we started hearing talks about possibly the Senate Democrats hanging tough on the omnibus and the risk of a government shutdown as soon as this coming Monday.
Right.
And now that risk is gone. But the overall question to you is: what's the likelihood, do you think, in the 112th Congress with having to deal with appropriations legislation, having to deal with a CR running out at some point, or as Dan just mentioned, the debt limit legislation, which has to be expanded, of a government shutdown? What do you think the risk of a government shutdown in the 112th Congress sometime in the next 6 months?
Well, the current CR expires on December 18th, so which is tomorrow. So Congress has to do something here quickly in order to prevent that. Yeah. In the 112th Congress, I think a lot of that is going to depend on what the president says in his State of the Union, like Dan said, as well as his budget, which is released the first Tuesday of every February. We have heard that agencies across the board will be asked to do more with less, as they have almost every year. But I think this year you can expect from the administration lower FY12 funding than, say, they got in FY11, whatever that may be, or FY10. I think agencies are going to be expected to find ways to cut their budgets and streamline operations. And with a message like that coming from the administration, it's going to be very easy for Congress to get behind it and appropriate less money in fiscal year 2012 than they have in the past.
And how do you see that impacting the group you represent, federal managers?
A lot depends on the agency itself. Agencies that are customer driven, such as the Social Security Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, when their budgets are cut, for them that means staffing, because the largest chunk of their agency budgets are from staffing, because you need those staff to deal with concerns from the people that they serve. You know, Social Security Administration, there's a long wait time for their 800 number to process their disability claims. More people helps them get their job done. That's where the biggest chunk comes from, is staffing. And you are going to see a large decrease in the level of customer service if you do that to customer-driven agencies.
Okay. And that's the problem for the American public, a decrease in customer service. What about the federal employees? Do you think there'll be rifts and furloughs?
I'm not quite sure. I don't want to go on record as making a guess as to that, but I do think that you are going to see standalone legislation introduced in the 112th Congress, like you did in the 111th, which would furlough federal employees for X number of days. I think you'll see standalone legislation. How far along it goes, I think, could be anybody's guess, but especially in the House, where this anti-civil service rhetoric is more rampant than it is in, say, the Senate, those bills like that have a good chance of moving.
Dan, we talked about the Debt Commission report and how it might get some traction in the 112th Congress, and I assume that's a battle that you're going to fight, on at least on the federal employee issues.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what we're gearing up for, laying the groundwork for right now, and we expect that we're going to be involved in that fight for the next several months. When we sort of look back in history at kind of a similar situation, when the entire congressional leadership changed this time, the House has changed, and there's been a pickup by the Republicans in the Senate, but not enough to have a majority. We look back to 1995. And that's a budget process that began then early on, but really wasn't resolved until after two government shutdowns, and finally was resolved by the enactment of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. And along the way, there were some pretty bad things, the cuts in the federal employee health benefits programs, proposals to cut COLAs, big increases in employee contributions to the retirement fund. And fortunately, at the very end of that process that started in January of 1995 and ended in 1997, what we ended up with was some relatively small increases in the employee contributions to the retirement fund, and a larger increases by agencies to the retirement fund. But that was it.
So you were pretty successful back
then. We were, yeah. I mean, you could write a book basically on the machinations of everything that we had to go to and how vulnerable we were during that period of time. But, you know, we look at that experience. I think the biggest thing that's different between what happened then and what happened now is that we weren't dealing with the unemployment we're dealing with now, and the economy wasn't in the shape that it's now. And we also weren't dealing with these reports from the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation about feds being overpaid and receiving too generous a benefit. So in a lot of ways, you've got that we have the same situation, but it's almost like it's on steroids in comparison in terms of how the environment is so unfavorable to the federal community.
All right. Well, earlier today, before we started the show, I saw Mike Causey in the hallway, and I think he's probably written several hundred columns about the rumors about the high three and the high five. You know, in other words, your retirement annuity being computed on the high five instead of the high three. And he always debunks these rumors and says it's not likely to happen. And that's a battle that NARF you've constantly fought over the years,
right,
as a rogue proposal surfaces occasionally. But now the threat is kind of much more real, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it was in the co-chair's report of the Fiscal Commission that came out on November 10th, and it was included in the final report that came out on December the 3rd. And you know, it's funny. Mike and I have talked about this a number of times, and anytime this particular proposal pops up, I know it generates lots of calls and emails to him. It does as well to us, because the problem with this is that, you know, federal employees who are close to retirement react to this by thinking, oh my God, I need to go to my personal office and file my retirement papers because I want to get out of here before this becomes effective. And first off, it's, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, and certainly nobody should base their retirement decisions right now, any federal employees who are listening, on the prospect of this happening. If it does happen, there will be warning as to that people can plan accordingly. But because it is in the Fiscal Commission report, and receiving a lot of attention, it's something that's very much on our radar screens as a real possibility in the new Congress.
Yeah, and I think it's important. You know, the sign that's on the side of the buses in Washington, D.C. for NARF occasionally, it talks about how Congress can take away these benefits
right.
that it's given. Congress theoretically would have the authority to require a high five calculation now for existing retirees and have that recalculation done. I mean, they could do that if they wanted to, but even the Debt Commission report is prospective retirees.
That's right. It for future retirees. I think that the odds of that happening are unlikely, but certainly there are things in the package that will affect retirees, like, for instance, using what's called the chain consumer price index to set COLAs for not just federal civilian retirement, but also Social Security and military retirement. That would result in a lower COLA for all those particular groups. Of course, the proposal on the federal employee health benefits program could hit retirees. And a lot of this, there's other proposals that we haven't even talked about that could directly hit federal retirees, like a COLA delay or deferral or an outright cancellation, the kind of thing we saw frequently during the 80s and 90s.
Are there other issues in the Debt Commission report that are battles that NARF will be fighting that we haven't mentioned?
I think there is, because one of the things the Debt Commission recommended is creating yet another commission called the Federal Workforce Entitlement Task Force to make recommendations to Congress to cut federal civilian and military retirement by $70 billion over 10 years. So there's a lot of different ways you could slice this pie, and if there were such a commission created to do that, there's a lot of proposals that we haven't even discussed that could be used to cut federal retirement and health benefits.
Okay, we're going to stop right now to hear just a brief word from our sponsor, Geico. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion with Dan Adcock and Jesse Clement on what's ahead in the new Congress. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at Geico, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to Geico. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the Gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to Geico. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with Geico once they've switched. In fact, on average, Geico customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host, and I'm talking to Jesse Clement and Dan Adcock. Jesse and Dan represent their organizations on Capitol Hill, and they're up there all the time. Jesse on behalf of federal managers, Dan on behalf of all federal employees and retirees, dealing primarily with their benefit issues. You're not painting a very pretty picture for the future and a major battle that you all have to fight. Jesse, what do you think? What do you think the major things that federal employees should be on the lookout for in the 112th Congress?
I think it's ongoing attacks on the civil service. Like Dana mentioned earlier, these are unprecedented. We have never seen such vitriol directed at such a small segment of the population. And I think we'll see some of these fiscal commission proposals gain traction, maybe not so many others, but definitely some of them. We saw a few pieces of anti-federal employee legislation introduced in the 111th Congress that didn't move too far. But I think we'll see reintroduction of those next year. I think they'll start to gain more traction, especially in the House. And I think there's probably some other things out there that lawmakers will do that we're not even aware of yet.
Dan, what do you see?
I agree. I mean, you know, you were asking before about other things that could be brought up. I know one that's been frequently mentioned is also making the match for the Thrift Savings Plan less generous, requiring employees to contribute more to get a bigger match. You know, those sorts of things are some of the problems. I mean, we've talked a little bit about, you know, how the debt limit could be used to extract some huge cuts, including into the federal community. And we've talked about what the president may say in the State of the Union and what might be in his budget. The other wild card in all this that really is outside the normal budget process is that in the meetings that we've had, at least up on the House side of the Hill, we continue to hear talk about bringing up individual proposals that were part of Congressman Eric Cantor's You Cut campaign last year. Amongst those proposals was calculating annuities based on the highest 5 years of salary, the pay freeze, of course, and other things. And so those may be brought up as individual pieces of legislation early in the session, even before we get to the budget resolution or what happens as a result of increasing the debt limit.
And what about proposals to cut the size of the federal workforce? Those have also been, I think, on Mr. Cantor's website.
That was also on UCUT. I think we'll not only see that in the appropriations process, but also as standalone legislation, which will get some traction in January, like Dan said.
And, you know, of course, then the Debt Commission report on cutting the size of the federal workforce will do it gradually over a period of about 8 or 9 years, replacing, I think, 2 employees for every 3 who leave. And yet I look at that and say, well, you know, that's a painless way over time. You can adjust on the one hand. On the other hand, it doesn't leave room for anything like if there's a future war, mm-hmm. or a future financial crisis or another 9/11 or something like that. I mean, that's when the size of the federal government fluctuates. And it just seems like, not knowing what the future holds and what the role for federal employees would be, that it's kind of hard to just go for that kind of a cutback.
It also ignores the fact that those people are doing a job. And if that person's not there, that job doesn't cease to exist. Right. And like we saw in the 1990s, when the workforce, especially the ranks of middle managers, were cut across the board, they just hired hundreds of thousands of more contractors to get the work done. And contractors cost a lot more money than federal employees do, at least in terms of payroll.
Right, but the Debt Commission report limits the size of federal contractors as well, which means that the government won't function as well as it has, which means the American people will be unhappy about that and put pressure on members of Congress to increase the role of the federal government so that it can serve the public. It's a vicious cycle.
I think one of our biggest...
And we've been here before, right?
We've definitely been here before, and I think one of our biggest challenges is getting the American public to realize that that's part of the cycle, that you elected certain leaders who want to reduce the size and function of government. But on the flip side, that means that you are not getting services that you have come to expect. And making that connection is something our groups have been fighting really hard to do, to kind of bring this home to the American people and tell them what this means for them.
So why don't we go just to some more positive things? Dan, there are other things on your legislative agenda at NARF other than just fighting these Debt Commission proposals and the anti-federal employee rhetoric that's leading to these legislative proposals. What are some of the more positive things that your group is trying to do for federal employees and retirees?
Well, one of the things that we've been involved with for a long time is there's 2 provisions in the Social Security Act called the Government Pension Offset and the Windfall Elimination Provision. And what they do is that they unfairly reduce the Social Security benefits of government retirees, not just federal, but also state and local government employees. What they're all about is the transition for a lot of government workers from when they weren't part of Social Security to the time that they were. And so the government pension offset reduces a government retiree's spousal or survivor benefit. The windfall elimination, or actually can, in many cases, will eliminate it, and it disproportionately affects women and low-income women. And then the windfall elimination provision eliminates the Social Security benefit, your own Social Security benefit, especially if you don't have substantial Social Security earnings. So, you know, our mantra throughout this very difficult political time is that we're always looking for opportunities in adversity. And because the Fiscal Commission takes on the issue of Social Security, what one possibility is that that Social Security is treated less like an exercise in deficit reduction and more like more addresses more of the fundamental changes that need to be made to the program and to ensure its solvency for the long term. And one of the things that Congress has been reluctant to do is take up the government pension offset and windfall elimination provisions outside the context of comprehensive Social Security reform. So if the Congress is serious about taking on Social Security in a comprehensive way, then we're going to do everything we can to take advantage of that, to try to get the government pension offset windfall and windfall elimination provision either repealed or at least mitigated.
And I know NARF has been a leader over the years on eliminating these unfair Social Security provisions. And you're always successful every Congress in getting what seems to be a majority of members of Congress to support repeal of windfall elimination and government pension offset. And yet it never goes anywhere. And why is that?
Well, I think that the problem is that we've seen in both Republican and Democratic administrations at the Social Security Administration a lot of institutional pushback on the issue, because there's some people who think that they got it right the first time. I mean, a lot about what this was supposed to do is to create an equal playing field between the public and private sectors on these Social Security benefits. We don't think so, and that's why, you know, not only do we support the legislation that repeal outright these provisions, but also legislation that would mitigate this as well. And so we think those are good compromises that should be addressed. But that's a large part of it is that, and the other part, of course, is just the cost of it. Full repeal of both provisions cost over $80 billion. And so that's why probably what's most likely is these reform proposals that would be less costly stand a better chance of becoming law. And so there's pushback because of the cost as well.
Jesse, anything on the FMA legislative agenda that's more like playing offense rather than defense?
We recognize that next year a lot of our lobbying efforts are going to be spent playing defense, and we're still going to continue to push for some of the good government issues that we always have in the past, one of them being managerial training. We've consistently gone to Congress and asked for better and more frequent training for managers.
And mandatory training.
Mandatory, yes, thank you. And that's going to remain a top priority on our legislative agenda next year, as well as we're going to be spending some time trying to override the pending legislation, which would freeze federal employee salaries in 2012.
Trying to override or perhaps find some exceptions. For example, some of the areas where it's a little bit unfair, where employees in pay for performance systems aren't going to get any increases, whereas other employees can get within grades.
Mm-hmm.
That's that kind of thing. And do you see what do you think your prospects are for getting into the pay freeze somewhat? Alleviating it, at least to some extent.
I think it's actually pretty good. I think this was a statement piece, not good policy, that the president and Congress did because it makes themselves look good to everyone who's not one of the 2 million federal employees. And they wanted, you know, the American people wanted to see that they're doing something in terms of deficit reduction. So they did it. I don't think they gave it much thought. I don't think they realized some of the implications for federal employees who are facing a 7% increase in their health insurance premiums next year. These folks are going to see a decrease in their paycheck come January 1st, 2011. That does nothing to aid in our economic recovery.
So in the little bit of time we have left, why don't you both talk to our listeners about what they can do to join your organizations to fight this battle to help the federal employee community. Dan?
Sure. Please visit our website at www.narfe.org. That's www.narfe.org. It's a great organization. Again, 300,000 members strong, all federal employees, retirees, and survivors are eligible. As we talked about this morning, we have a real fight on our hands, but it really is a fight we can win, and we really need you to come and help us and join us and be part of this effort.
Jesse, you have 15 seconds.
I'd make the same call. We are as strong as our membership, and the more members we have, the more seriously we will be taken on Capitol Hill. Our website is www.fedmanagers.org. That's F-E-D, managers.org. We have an upcoming convention, a full day of training that's open to all federal managers, not just our members. Come check us out.
Well, many thanks to Jesse Clement and Dan Adcock from NARF for a great show. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Remember, Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend and have a wonderful holiday season. Thank you.
Thank you.